This is Day to Day from NPR News. I'm Alex Chadwick.
Lolita, light of my life, fire of my loins, my sin, my soul.
That is the opening line of Vladimir Nabokov's novel Lolita, as read by the actor Jeremy Irons on a Random House recording. Lolita is the story of a 37-year-old man's emotional and sexual love affair with a 12-year-old girl. Lolita, the book, itself is now middle-aged. It was first published 50 years ago tomorrow. In the first of two stories, Day to Day's Madeline Brand reports on how Lolita became one of the masterpieces of modern fiction.
Sure, the material is racy. It's the hook, if you will, but what's kept readers sticking around for the last half century is the writing. Listen to the next line.
Lolita. The tip of the tongue taking a trip of three steps down the palate to tap at three on the teeth. Lolita.
But just as we're basking in the warm glow of this imagery and alliteration, this literary art, the rug is pulled out from under us.
You can always count on a murderer for a fancy prose style.
Our narrator isn't Vladimir Nabokov. It's Nabokov's creation, Humbert Humbert, an eloquent, urbane, and handsome European professor who seduces, no, rapes, a 12-year-old girl. Humbert is writing his memoir in prison after killing his rival, Claire Quilty, who took Lolita away from him. Humbert's memoir is an elaborate explanation and justification of what he's done, and early on, through his sophisticated writing, he seduces the reader into being on his side.
A normal man, given a group photograph of schoolgirls or Girl Scouts, and asked to point out the comeliest one, will not necessarily choose the nymphette among them. You have to be an artist and a madman. A creature of infinite melancholy, with a bubble of hot poison in your loins, and a super voluptuous flame permanently aglow in your subtle spine. Oh, how you have to cringe and hide, in order to discern at once, by ineffable signs, the slightly feline outline of a cheekbone, the slenderness of a downy limb, and other indices which despair and shame and tears of tenderness forbid me to tabulate. The little deadly demon among the wholesome children. She stands, unrecognized by them, and unconscious herself of her fantastic power.
I definitely could identify a lot with Humbert Humbert's feeling of despair and love, how it's almost that he can't really have her. I could easily understand how bad he wanted Lolita, and how not only society looked down upon it because of her age, but how also she never really reciprocated that love.
That's Drew Webb. He's a Cornell University sophomore taking a class on famous authors who taught at Cornell in Ithaca, New York. Nabokov was one of them. He was hired as a Russian literature professor in 1948. And in the summers he had off, Nabokov and his wife Vera would leave Ithaca and travel across the United States. Vera would drive. They stayed in motels after long days exploring America and researching butterflies. Nabokov biographer Brian Boyd.
By this stage, he'd been working as a lepidopterist, a curator of butterflies and moths at the Harvard Museum of Comparative Zoology, and he'd got used to working, as many scientists did, on small index cards. And he began to find that this was a very flexible way of writing small sections of a novel, partly because he didn't write a novel from start to finish. He spent several months conceiving it in his head and then could write any section at any point and then just slot the cards in the right order. So he would take a little batch of cards out to the car and wind up the windows so that he wasn't bothered by the traffic noise and just sit there composing Lolita on a car seat, which is a wonderful image.
When Nabokov returned to Ithaca to teach, he lived in various homes while their owners, other professors, were on sabbatical. He wasn't making much money, so it was a good way to live well. One house he lived in is here, on a steep hill near the campus. Russian studies professor Gavriel Shapiro is Cornell's resident Nabokov expert, and he says Nabokov lived in what he called this dreadfully drafty dacha for about 2 years.
This house, according to Nabokov himself, served as the prototype for Ramsdale House in Lolita.
The house where Humbert Humbert came to live with Lolita and her mother.
Another interesting legend that goes with this house, at some point, Nabokov apparently was dissatisfied with the way his work on Lolita was going, and he was taking his index cards to the incinerator. And he was stopped right in time before he disposed of them.
While Nabokov was in Ithaca, he did a tremendous amount of research to get the details of American life right. After all, says his biographer Brian Boyd, Nabokov was a Russian emigre and English was his second language.
So he read books on adolescence and guides to controlling your teenage daughters and teen magazines. And he was really not a low culture person. So this was all research. It wasn't his standard range of reading. And he also would do things like travel on the buses around Ithaca and record phrases in a little notebook from young girls that he heard coming back from school.
The germ of Lolita was created in 1939 when Nabokov wrote a short story in Russian called The Enchanter about a man who marries a woman to get to her daughter. It was not well received, and Nabokov's friends convinced him to abandon it. But the idea never left him, and a decade later, Nabokov took up the story again in America. And again, some of his friends were horrified. His closest friend, the man who brought him to the Cornell faculty, Morris Bishop, was afraid the book would damage Cornell's reputation. Nabokov considered publishing anonymously, also afraid of what could happen to Cornell, but he decided against it. Here is a letter Nabokov wrote Morris Bishop, as read by Cornell's curator of rare books and manuscripts, Catherine Reagan.
Frankly, I'm not much concerned with the irate paterfamilias referring to Cornell. I know that Lolita is my best book so far. I calmly lean on my conviction that it is a serious work of art and that no court could prove it to be lewd and libertine.
The book had just been published in France and rejected by five American publishers who were afraid they'd be prosecuted on obscenity charges. The French publisher was Olympia Press, which put out some serious books and lots of pornography. Nabokov didn't know that. He was just relieved someone agreed to publish his book. And so Lolita debuted, clad in a plain green cover, in Paris on September 15, 1955.
I was on the left bank. I wandered into a dusty, quaint old bookstore.
Alfred Appel was one of Nabokov's students at Cornell before being drafted for the Korean War in 1956.
I did a double, maybe triple take, because there was a book called Lolita by Vladimir Nabokov, my professor, and in the matching green Olympia covers, on the left side was a book called Until She Screams, and on the right side of Lolita was a book called The Sexual Life of Robinson Crusoe. So I bought the middle book, Lolita, and took it back to the barracks. Someone wanted to read my dirty book, but couldn't get through the first sentence and threw it down, said it was goddamn literature. And I read it, and I was just astonished because it was a great book, I thought, immediately.
The English novelist Graham Greene agreed, and he put it on his list of the best books of 1955. That prompted an outcry by a conservative newspaper in London, which called the book sheer unrestrained pornography. The ensuing controversy brought Lolita international attention, and finally, 3 years later, in 1958, it came out in America. Publishers saw what a salacious topic could do for book sales. Tomorrow, the reaction to Lolita after it's published in the U.S. and why it's regarded as one of the best books ever written in the English language.
We didn't appreciate his genius. It's clear. No one did. It was in retrospect only that we realized what we lost after he'd gone.
Madeline Brand, NPR News.
And there's more on Lolita at our website, npr.org.